Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Another busy week of Big 12 basketball, and we are here to talk about it on Heartland College Sports with our lead Big 12 basketball columnist, Matthew Postens. I'm Pete Mundo. We're Heartland College Sports. We cover the Big 12, and we are always glad you are here joining us on the show. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Hit the like button on YouTube. We always appreciate our radio affiliates as well. And if you know on the podcast, drop that 5-star rating and review. Well, Matthew, I don't want to say a ho-hum week because it wasn't in the Big 12. Maybe it didn't have the juice of last week. But to me, we have to start with Bill Self, the health issues there for a legendary coach. He says he's coaching Saturday against Kansas State. But for a guy who's had heart issues and health troubles, yeah. I can't help but think as to whether or not Bill Self is seeing the finish line. What are you seeing? How do you see this playing out right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something you got to consider if you're Bill Self. I mean, obviously, he had the heart issues a few years ago at the Big 12 tournament. I think he's had another procedure done in the last 6 to 8 months, if I recall.
Yep.
You know, when you get to this point in your life, he's in his 60s, and he's a young 60s at this point. You got to think about, you know, managing stress, managing your health. This is not an easy profession that he is in. You know, I think for me, he's accomplished everything that, you know, he could possibly accomplish. He's won 2 national championships. He's in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He's one of the winningest coaches in college basketball history. You kind of have to balance your competitive spirit with what else do I have left to prove? And, you know, how much of the rest of my life do I want to enjoy? His father was a high school coach. I believe he lived to be in his 90s. You know, he had a good solid 20, 30 years of retirement. So, you know, Kansas certainly isn't going to fire Bill Self at this point. That's not going to happen. He has a lifetime contract. If Bill Self leaves Kansas at any point in the next 2 or 3 years, it's going to be because he decides to do so. I don't think this season is necessarily going to drive him into retirement unless he gets, you know, some news that, you know, really just makes him think, you know what, maybe it's just time for me to go. You know, guys like Jay Wright, Bruce Pearl, they've made decisions based on NIL, the transfer portal, all the churn of what you have to do in this job now. You combine all that with the health issues that Bill Self has had the past few years. It's definitely a consideration.
Yeah, it is. Now, another coach to me took the headlines this week in the Big 12, and that was Bobby Hurley. After the game, he basically said, our home court advantage blows. We have none. This place has been dead since pre-COVID. He's been there since 2015. He's in the final year of a contract. I mean, it's rare that a coach like has a final year of a contract because typically you either leave or get fired before you get to that final year. It just sounded like a guy to me after they lost to West Virginia that knows this is it. It's over.
Yeah.
What was your read on Bobby Hurley?
That was pretty much my read too. You know, a guy who knows that he's not going to get a new contract out of Arizona State. I'm not surprised he stayed because he was making good money. He's a basketball coach. He enjoys what he does. But, you know, to not just hear we don't have a home court advantage, but to also hear him say, I can't get through to these guys. He also said that the other night after they lost to West Virginia. It tells me that, you know, he's reached the end of that line with that job. And just about every coach reaches the end of the line with their job. Very few actually get to retire the way they want to retire. I know Bobby Hurley had much bigger goals for that program than what he's accomplished, but you know, he was already on the hot seat coming into this season. I think he has a better team this year than he had last year. but it's just not coming together in the way that he was hoping for. They're going to end up being one of the bottom four or five teams in the conference. And you juxtapose that with the success that the football team is having, mm-hmm. that the women's basketball team is now having under Molly Miller. Their baseball team's exceptional. They're a great softball program. That's kind of the one lagging program right now. So I don't think he's going to get fired before the season ends or let go before the season ends. There's no reason to do that, but I'm sure their athletic director, Graham Rossini, is already in the background looking for who his replacement will be.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, I don't want to downplay what West Virginia did. They're 4-2. They get a mm-hmm. road win in the Big 12. That's always good.
Yep.
And I think any Mountaineers fan right now would be like, hey, 4-2, sign me up. Now, Saturday, they're at Arizona. That is just a brutal game for them.
Yeah.
But it's to me, it's like, they're playing with house money at this point, right? After that, they have K-State, Baylor, and Cincinnati, three winnable games. They mm-hmm. lose on Saturday. They win three games. They're sitting there at 7-3 in the Big 12. I mean, this is manageable for West Virginia, and I've got to imagine Mountaineer fans are feeling really good right now.
Yeah, it's a very manageable schedule from here on, and I actually looked at it last night after their win. They've got three ranked games left. I think they got one with BYU and one with Texas Tech left. They've come together in a way that I wasn't quite expecting. Again, new coach for the fourth straight year, a new head coach, brand new talent, almost a complete flip of the roster. After they lost that opener to Iowa State, I was like, oh boy, because it was a bad game. But they bounced back really well. Honor Huff has really figured out how to play his offensive game in the Big 12. And now you're starting to see Lorient, Eagle Staff, these other guys come up. The really big takeaway from the Arizona State game was that Honor Huff really didn't have a good game offensively, but Eagle Staff and Lorient stepped up, and now they've got their own little big three guys they can lean on offensively to help them score. I think their defense is getting better. I think the Iowa State loss was a shock to the system to them, because they're like, a lot of those guys, it was their first Big 12 game, period.
Yeah.
Most of them hadn't played in the conference. But now I think they've kind of bounced back from that and realized, you know what, we have the talent to be successful in this conference. We can play defense at the level we need to play it at. Now the question is, can you take advantage of what looks like a very manageable schedule against, you know, mostly against teams that aren't in that top five? And, you know, if they go 11-7 in conference, that's a 20-win season before they get to the Big 12 tournament. That really puts them in good position to be in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they are in a great position. So with that, I mean, this week there were plenty of blowouts. UCF disappointed me. Not that I thought they were going to go to Hilton and win on Tuesday night, but I just wanted to see, after a couple of good wins, playing Arizona close at home, how they were going to perform against an Iowa State team that had lost two in a row last week after reaching number two in the polls. And they just got absolutely blown out from the start. So is that more about Iowa State bouncing back, or was it about UCF just not being ready for the moment?
I think it was a little bit more about Iowa State. I mean, they got took to the woodshed by Kansas. They had a bad game against Cincinnati. They needed to get right. They needed to get their big three going, and all three of them got going the other night. I think it was more about them and more about Hilton than it was about UCF. If you're UCF, though, you don't want to let this snowball into a third straight loss, a fourth straight loss. That's kind of been their pattern the last 2 years. They get off to a good start in Big 12, and then they hit this rut where they lose four, five, six games in a row, and they end up not being able to make the NCAA tournament. It's really important for them in the next week to stop that streak with a win this weekend or a win next week, and kind of get back into that rhythm of, even if it's just winning a game and losing a game, you know, bouncing back and forth between that, they're going to win 19, 20 games in conference before the Big 12 tournament. That should position them for an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament, but they can't let the snowball.
I'm totally with you. That's going to be critical for Coach Dawkins. Now, Arizona is still one of three unbeaten teams in the country. They are 19-0. They are 6-0 overall. They demolished Cincinnati. I mean, they pull away in the second half is really what they did. But, you know, listen, this is clearly one of the best teams in the country. Yeah. When you look at Arizona and you're trying to figure out what this team can be, we know they can get to a Final Four. They have the talent to win a national championship. Is there something else or something extra you're wanting to see from this team as we reach the back half of January?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that earlier today. You know, they're a team with very few flaws. The thing that kind of held them back last year was there were times they didn't play defense at a Big 12 level consistently. They're doing that this year. They're actually one of three teams in the country that is in the top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency at KenPom. So they're not only scoring at a high rate, and they've got 12 wins of 20 points or more, they're defending at a high rate. They held Cincinnati the other night to 30% shooting. They forced 15 turnovers. They absolutely blew them away in the paint and on the boards. I mean, all the things, all the boxes you would check for having a high level defense, Arizona has that now. Tommy Lloyd has gotten his holdover guys to improve. He's gotten his freshmen to buy into playing defense. And they've got a big 7'2 guy inside who's a great rim protector and turns things back. So it's hard to find a weakness with this team right now. And you kind of feel like if they stay healthy going into the NCAA tournament, they could win it all. I mean, they're that kind of team right now. I was watching that. The only thing that maybe the last couple of games, they've gotten off to slow starts offensively. Cincinnati's a really good defensive team. They're in the top 10 in KenPom as well. So that explained part of that. A week ago against Arizona State, they got off to a slow start offensively. That's a rivalry game. That kind of explains that. Outside of that, it's really hard to find a flaw in this team right now.
Yeah, it is. Let's look ahead to Saturday. Saturday, you've got the Arizona-West Virginia game. We touched on that a little bit earlier. That's actually the first game of the day on Saturday in the Big 12 is in Tucson, Arizona. How does that make any sense? I know it's all for TV, but I mean, that's just, it's crazy. So that's the first game of the day, 1 o'clock Central time on CBS, Arizona, West Virginia in Tucson. But you have a top 15 matchup between Houston and Texas Tech.
Yeah.
We've talked about how Tech really has struggled against ranked teams. Now they got that win last week at home against BYU. I think that this Houston team's a totally different level and a different beast, but you're going to have College Game Day there. It should be a tremendous scene in Lubbock on Saturday morning and then into the nighttime when that game tips off at 5:30 local time on ESPN. How do you read this game and what it ultimately means in the Big 12 race?
Well, number one, assuming everybody can get there.
Yeah,
well, we got some weather coming into Lubbock, and I'm in the Dallas area, so we got weather coming in here too. I'm not going anywhere this weekend. I'm just watching games on TV. I think Tech found some things defensively against Houston last weekend. Grant McCaslin said that after the game when I asked him about it. And what's really intriguing to me is that it's not just Grant McCaslin demanding that his players play better defense. It's JT Toppin doing it as well, asking his teammates to elevate their play defensively to get to a level where they can be successful in the Big 12. You've got the best player, perhaps the best player in the conference, demanding that his teammates play better defense. That's going to pay off down the line, even if they lose to Houston on Saturday. I think the big question now for Tech is, you know, can they slow down or can they deal with Houston's defense? Because that defense is back to being, Bobby Hurley, I think, described it last weekend as a vice grip. You know, they tighten on you little by little throughout the game and they make you make mistakes and they just impose their will upon you. That's going to be the big matchup in this game is Houston's defense against Tech's offense, because for the last 9 minutes of the BYU game, it wasn't just that their defense was good. Their offense was at another level. I mean, it was incredibly efficient. Toppin, Anderson, and Watts were just killing BYU inside and outside. Houston's a different beast defensively. They're going to take some things away like they did the first game, and it's going to be up to guys like Atwell, Watts, some of their other guys around Anderson and Toppin to step up and force, you know, Houston to get out of some of the things I like doing defensively. If they can do that, they've got a good chance of winning. But they can't be overly reliant on one or two guys offensively in this game. Houston will ride those guys, make sure they can't do much against them, and then force the other guys around them to make plays.
Well, I think it was Bobby Hurley, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said earlier this week, what did he say about Houston? That they just basically beat you in the submission I think how he described playing Houston. That might've been last week, but that's how it is. That's the kind of team Kelvin Sampson wants. Yep. They just want to basically wear you down over 40 minutes where you just wave the white flag, and they've been very good at that. So I'm intrigued to see with Texas Tech's Big Two, how exactly that works, because Tech does not have much of a bench, and you know, they're not, this is a bad matchup for Tech because they have five guys they can ride 38 minutes, but Tech's going to wear them down, Matthew. That's where I think that Houston's going to provide a major issue for this Tech team.
Yeah. And I think McCaslin knows he's going to have to run a few more guys through on Saturday. That's why Atwell is so important. He's a 3-and-D guy who is really beginning to become a fourth scoring option for them. I saw McCaslin work a couple of different guys into the game, but again, really just 5 or 6 minutes during the game, just to give his guys a little bit of a blow. That's going to be part of the equation. How much can you get out of Toppin? And how much can you get out of Anderson? How much can you rest them? I will say this, against BYU, Toppin played all 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But playing BYU, BYU's defense, much different animal than
exactly.
Houston's defense.
Yes, no doubt about it. So we do have some rivalries this weekend. How about this? We've got the Holy War on Saturday in basketball. Utah's not any good. Tickets are still $160 to get in the door on the secondary market for the Holy War in a game that BYU could win by 20 points. It just goes to show you how great that rivalry is.
Yeah.
TCU's at Baylor. Both those teams are struggling. We've got a Sunflower Showdown between Kansas and Kansas State. I want to touch on that game. Jerome Tang, I mean, the seat's red hot. If not for the buyout, let's be honest, he may not be there this season. The buyout's enormous.
Yeah.
They beat Utah this week. I still don't think this team's going anywhere, but it would be the most Jerome Tang thing ever and K-State thing ever to beat Bill Self, who comes back from his, you know, game off, and have this amazing moment at Bramlage, and then like lose four in a row. That just feels like a very K-State thing right now.
I was actually talking to a K-State fan today. He's like, "Wow, it's like watching Jerome Tang is like 5 wins in a row, then 5 losses in a row, then 5 wins in a row, then 5 losses in a row."
Yes,
but yeah, you're absolutely right. That would be the most Jerome Tang thing ever for them to beat Kansas on Saturday. Offense isn't this team's problem. They can score points. It's defense. I mean, I felt like they outplayed Utah by a pretty good margin the other night. The problem was they couldn't stop Utah. I mean, there were two guys in that game. One, you know, Haggerty, and I'm going to forget the other guy's name for Utah, but both of them had 30 plus points. Neither one of those teams could play defense at a high level. And Kansas State won, you know, essentially because they made a couple more baskets than the other team. You know, if Utah had played a little bit better defense in that game, they could have won that contest. But yeah, beating Kansas on Saturday is not going to save Jerome Tang's job. I'm not sure what's going to save Jerome Tang's job at this point besides the buyout. It's funny because, you know, a few years ago they came off the Elite Eight run, and I felt like this is the perfect guy because he's got that attitude that players like. He does a great job in the portal. He's got NIL support. He could have a really good run there. And now I think we're kind of reaching the conclusion that Jerome Tang may be a great assistant coach and a great defensive coach and a great recruiter, but maybe he's just a merely good head coach, and a merely good head coach is not going to work in this conference.
No, it's just too deep. The conference is too good. So what else? You know, I'm wondering if like a Steve Lutz in Oklahoma State can have a moment on Saturday against Iowa State. I'm not sitting here predicting it, but it feels like he's due for one of those. And if they get off and running, they like to obviously, you know, keep it up tempo, score a lot of points, play a high scoring game. That's not Iowa State's game. Iowa State has struggled on the road, as we saw last week. I don't know. That one is mildly intriguing, but it could completely go the other way. Is there something else on this Saturday that stands out to you in the Big 12?
You know, that game could be interesting because I covered the first one up in Ames, and Iowa State's had a problem getting started offensively in games.
Yep.
Oklahoma State's not a great defensive team and not a great rebounding team outside of Parsifala, but they're a really good offensive team. And in their own place, the offense gets a little bit more juice for the home team. I could see them winning that game. I really could. Oklahoma State is close to having that kind of a win. I don't know if it happens on this weekend or not, but they're close to having that kind of win, and they kind of need to have that kind of win just from a resume standpoint. I mean, they feel like the kind of team that will probably make the NCAA tournament, you know, if they win the games they're supposed to win. But a win like that could put them, you know, maybe on an 8 seed line as opposed to a 10 seed line when we get to, you know, seeding out the field of 68. So I could see Oklahoma State winning that game. I think the Houston Tech game is going to suck up all the oxygen this weekend, you know, with the exception of the Kansas State game. It kind of feels like this is one of those weekends where we could have a couple of good games in spite of ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think we could see a fair amount of blowouts this weekend.
I'm with you there. That's just where my head is at right now in terms of looking at the schedule and seeing where it all leads from here. So it's going to be interesting. We'll be, of course, chatting more in the days to come. Matthew Poston's our lead Big 12 basketball columnist here at Heartland College Sports, joining us on the show as always. Enjoy the games this weekend, my friend. Stay safe down there in the Dallas area, and mm-hmm. we will talk to you soon.
All right. You too.
All right, Matthew Poston's joining us. I'm Pete Mundo on Heartland College Sports. Please make sure you are subscribed right now to the channel. If you're a Big 12 basketball, football, we've got it all covered here on the show. And if you're new on the podcast, please drop that 5-star rating and review. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great day.